see which one it was. You're listening to Katie and Kay Carbondale. This is Geek Speak Live with Louie and Matt. Support for Katie and Kay comes from Louie the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, networking support, tutoring, and web design. Be secure, informed, and connected. 948-7992. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, from Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with Louie
the Computer Guy. How's your week going so far, Matt?
It's been a busy day so far. So
yeah, my phone's been kind of blowing up.
It's been a busy, but there's been a lot of phone calls today for certain.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, like last week I had all the time in the world. This week I'm taking a short week because I'm like going up to Wyoming,
mm-hmm.
and for the holiday. And so, of course, I'm trying to get out of here on Thursday morning. So I've had enough work to come in to keep me busy all the way through Friday. So I'm putting stuff off till next week.
All right.
Donna Dalton is asking me, have we talked about The Ring?
The Ring?
Should I say, as in Lord of?
Lord of the Rings? The horror movie, The Ring? Or The Ring of Fire, Johnny Cash? What are we doing here?
I don't know. I'll text her back and see what she says. She's probably listening, laughing. Should have said, as in my precious.
Oh, we're getting a call.
Oh, there we go.
You're on with the geeks.
Hey, geeks, it's Donna. Yes, I'm listening and laughing.
Excellent.
I was talking about
that. Were you talking ring, about my video. Precious?
No, I was talking about the Ring video doorbell.
Oh, okay. And do you have any firsthand experience with it?
Well, quite a few people I know have them,
mm-hmm.
and because, you know, they're constantly looking at them, because anytime somebody, you know, goes to their door, or
mm-hmm.
they can see, and then they can communicate, mm-hmm. because I think they have ones that have a microphone. The problem with my doorbell, it's right in front of a big post, so I'm kind of curious if I could put the camera in a different location, but... the nice thing about it, have you guys seen it at all?
You know, I don't think I've actually seen it. God knows I've heard the ads because I listen to XM a fair amount, and they're just mm-hmm. peppering the airwaves with ads about it.
So. I know they're bought by Amazon and that they're available at certain big box stores.
The nice thing about them is people in your neighborhood can post videos of people coming to their doors.
Like, look out for this guy? Is that who you're talking
about? Yes,
like, oh,
exactly.
Sweet, yeah. Do a little screen grab.
So it's like the Ring neighborhood or something.
Okay. Well, you know, I was thinking it would be really cool if you could, like get a little bit of cross-platform integration with Facebook and just, like, have your Ring video feed, like, switched over to Facebook Live or something. And then you could have like all your Facebook friends watch your door for you.
That's a great idea. That's maybe, a great idea. Maybe
they not.
They have APIs or something that somebody who's really smart and knows how to do that programming can figure that out.
Yeah, well, when this comes around the pike, it's 6 months from now. Just remember, you heard it here first.
That's right. There you go.
And it's available on NPR.org.
Yes.
And KDNK.org.
Yeah.
That's right. So you guys can't help me out on this, huh? I wonder if any of your listeners have set up the Ring doorbell at all.
You know, I could say all the people in the ads, they did not sound like they were Mensas, you know, and they all got it set up and working okay. So
yeah, it looks like it's actually pretty simple. And
yeah.
Boy,
it's probably as simple as choose your Wi-Fi network, enter your password, or press the button on your router for 3 seconds, and next thing you know, it's linked up, and you can, you know, probably have a URL that you can open
so
up.
Oh, it probably has that WPS setup or something.
Yeah, they probably,
which has vulnerabilities, by the way.
Yes, I've heard that. So
I've heard that it's much better to turn that WPS off, but.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was thinking that would be good. The other thing that I still have on my Mac, by the way, which is really nice. It's called Security Spy. And so even if I leave my Mac on and Security Spy on, let's say I go on a vacation or something, mm-hmm. I can leave my computer on. And it does motion detection, of course, and you can set it to make, you know, a screaming loud noise, like a big, you know, scream thing.
Like some of that malware screen. Does.
They have malware that
screams at you these days.
So
how does it do the motion detection? Are there motion detectors in a Mac that I didn't know about? Or is it?
Well, some of them have.
The software does.
Huh.
It has the camera, and then the software can detect changes.
Oh, okay.
In the pixels.
All right. Okay.
So,
the
edge detection.
Yes, and then you can set up different areas that, you know, like let's say that you point it at a window. If cars drive by, you don't want the motion detection
to go off. Exclude that area.
But what I had set up is I had a wireless router, right, a time capsule.
Okay.
And so my Mac was connected wirelessly to my time capsule, and I had my time capsule in kind of a hidden area. So that way, if somebody came in and decided to take my Mac, it would have recorded them and saved the video on the time capsule that was hidden.
Oh, very cool.
Even if they took the Mac.
So you wouldn't lose the video. That kind of covers one of the main vulnerabilities I was thinking of, you know. So.
Right, and that's the other nice thing. Some of these cameras, you know, you have to pay for storage.
Uh-huh.
So I'm really trying to find a way to where I can just have cameras, and then I have my own video storage. Like, you guys have your own servers, and you can have your own video server, you know, storage on your own servers, I would think.
Yeah, exactly.
So you don't have to worry about bandwidth. And then, you know, periodically you can dump it or it'll override.
You know, there are certain cloud services that your computer can treat like a local network drive as well, you know, like Ignite or something like that. You
know? So I use a tool called R Cloud. Let me make sure it's that.
R, like the letter R?
Yeah, so it's like R Sync.
Oh, okay.
Let me look it up real quick. Just make sure it's R Cloud.
So it's like an open source version of Ignite or something like that, Matt? Have you used Ignite or iDrive?
Oh, darn it. Now I can't remember the name of it. I use it all the time.
Okay.
R Clone, that's what it is, R.
All right. I was going to say, that's your homework for next week.
So I use a tool called R Clone, and it will connect to Alibaba, Amazon Drive, Amazon S3, Backblaze, B2, Box, Clef, DigitalOcean, so on and so forth, down the list. The two I've used it with are Backblaze, B2, and Wasabi, and I was able to mount my Wasabi connection. So I'm paying for a terabyte of storage there, and it mounted as a 1 petabyte disk array.
Cool.
So you do R clone, and I can't remember the command, but anyway. Mm-hmm. And you run that, and it mounts, it uses Fuse to mount that to your computer, and it'll show up as a 1 petabyte storage array, and you can do... Mm-hmm. I was trying to do a live backup to it, and it was kind of finicky, so it's more of a kind of a, you know, you have it stored on your local disk, and then you synchronize everything from your local disk up to the cloud. It'll do that really well,
okay.
And it'll even go so far as to check all the hashes on the cloud side and check all your hashes locally and say, oh, these files haven't changed, and just upload what has changed.
Got
so it's
it.
Very bandwidth efficient.
So I guess the question in this context would be, will it do it quickly enough, you know, when some creeper comes walking into your living room to come steal your Mac? I mean, the video gets, you know,
gets stolen,
gets recorded. Will it get transferred up to Wasabi?
Well, what happens
enough,
is,
you know?
It's on the Mac, the Security Spy, at least, it's actually kind of always recording, or it has a buffer, right? So it'll record 10 seconds, and so if somebody comes in and takes your Mac, it's already been recording for 10 seconds.
Got it.
Yeah, a lot of the security systems or camera systems have that, where the camera holds 10 seconds of the whatever it is, and then if there's motion, it'll go back in time, you know, 4 or 5, whatever, however many seconds you've told it to, so you can see them before they enter, and then it'll deal with uploading that.
Got it.
Right. Yeah. The other thing, you know, speaking of time capsules, I had a client once in Aspen, and they had a lot of, it was actually like an art gallery or something, and they had all their Macs set up, you know, wirelessly to this time capsule, and they were trying to back up. Well, what happened is whoever had set it up before I had gotten them as a client, the backup had never finished because it was all done wirelessly, and they had so much to back up. So it never, ever completed. And you know how it was set up to back up every hour? So mm-hmm. every hour, the backup would try and start again, but since it never completed, so they never had their backup. They were wondering why their Wi-Fi was really bad and all this stuff, and I come to find out that they never had their backup complete. So once I backed it up, you know, wired, then wirelessly it could back up fine. But,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, wow. You don't even think about that, you know? But mm-hmm. the first backup takes so much time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because everyone has 300 gigs, and even over a wire, that's going to, you know, the very best you're going to do in most cases is 2 gigs a minute. So, mm-hmm. You know, you're talking 100 minutes. You're talking an hour and a half or 2 hours to do your initial backup in the best of conditions.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Well, I've been known to basically trigger to introduce machines in a staggered fashion, you know, in a situation like that, just for that reason, you know, so that yeah. it doesn't, even if you do have hardwire, so it doesn't congest the network so much. So, you know, nobody can do anything. So,
yeah, right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So let me ask you, I wanted to ask you, Donna, do you have any Apple AirPods? Do you own a pair of those?
I don't.
Okay. Got it. Because I hear that they test out really well, especially when exposed to gastric acid.
Oh,
have you heard that story?
No.
There's a man in Taiwan, basically fell asleep, and when he woke up, one of his AirPods was missing, and it turned out that he had swallowed it. And that's purportedly crazy. Could even hear the music inside of his stomach.
Oh my gosh, that's really gross. That's really scary.
It is, and we won't even go to the part of like how it came out, you know, because he did not go to the hospital. Let's put it that way. So, but you know, I think it entertains a lot of really interesting questions, and you know, like the question of. Like what kind of music helps you digest food the best? Or, I mean, is like, you know, if you're like doing salsa music, is that best for Mexican food? Or, I mean, just, you know, so anyway.
That's funny. I can't imagine that thing got around all those colon turns, but.
It still worked. It still worked.
I have one more question for you.
Okay.
So I'm in the parking lot the other day with somebody and they're looking for their car. It's a big parking lot, and I had heard this, but I tried it and it didn't work for me. Somebody had said if you hold your, you know, your car fob mm-hmm. on your, you know, chin or your temple, you know, or on a bone, right? It will increase the range for for the clicker, right? Hmm. For the noise.
Huh.
Do you think that's true? Do you think that's true? It's like increasing the strength of the antenna. So
I don't know. It's got urban legend written all over it.
You know what? Well, I tried it because I saw my car. I tried it and mm-hmm. I tried it with and without, like putting it to my chin. And honestly, it did not make a difference. So I'm kind of curious. Okay.
It really depends on the frequency it's using.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So Donna, real quick, do you know about the hack for these keyless entry cars? Have you heard about that? The security hack. And unfortunately, I know about this because it happened to my daughter. There are these guys running around and they have this device I can't remember the exact details of it, of what, how it works, but it basically sends out a false signal. It basically, if they can get within 100 feet between you and your car, you know, it's like if you park your car outside of your apartment building and your key fob is within 100 feet or a couple hundred feet from your car, they basically, this device will go in the middle and it'll prod the key fob to send a signal, and the key fob will send a signal, and it basically gives the device all the information it needs to get into your car. And,
wow.
And then it unlocks your car. And so it's like a totally clean. The good news is your windows don't get broken. The bad news is that if you have anything valuable in your car, it won't be there afterwards.
Wow.
So anyway, the thing to think about is where you position your car in relationship to where you're. The other possibility is you can actually purchase now little miniature Faraday cages for your key fob.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know, basically it's a little Faraday pouch. You can put your key fob in if you do have to be, you know, within that range of your car.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll basically block the RF from getting to it. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting. I wonder if the little thing that I have for my credit card will work. That might not work, though, huh? Because that's not a RF. I mean, that's a different kind of a chip.
The Faraday cages are usually pretty broad spectrum, so
yeah,
it's worth testing.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's worth testing. I definitely have a pouch for my credit cards.
Well, you might Google the whole issue, because I've actually heard that putting it in tin foil will help. It will basically do the job too, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
But then you have to worry about alien transmissions. So.
Oh my gosh, I sure miss you guys.
Well, we miss you. Right, hopefully we'll catch you at Mountain Fair this year when you come through.
Okay, so, well, I'm going to listen to the rest of the show. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for calling, Donna.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm, bye.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, 963-2976.
That was Donna Dalton, our foreign correspondent.
Yeah.
Calling from sunny Florida.
Well, hopefully sunny Florida.
Yeah. This time of year, it's usually pretty good down there. You know, it's actually probably getting a little bit hot down there, I'm guessing. A little hot and humid. So, but yeah, you know, it's, I have a pair of like kind of knockoff. They don't look like AirPods, but they're similar technology. But I'm absolutely underwhelmed. The battery life on the things is just terrible. You know, it's like about 2.5 hours total. And I guess I would just, I want to get at least 3 workouts out of my AirPods, you know, is what I, you know, I'm usually at the gym for three, mm-hmm. for an hour. And when it peters out right in the middle of my third workout, it's really sad. So
it's fairly sunny in Florida.
Is it? Good.
Uh-huh. Unless you're central or west panhandle. So
nice.
The internet. So you wanted to talk about 5G?
Yeah, you know, we should probably talk. There are a lot of it's not a conspiracy theory, but there's a lot of hysteria,
right,
about 5G radiation being drastically different,
yeah,
from 4G radiation, and that you know, that's going to be the technology we're going to have to live with, and that we're basically going to end up with, you know, craniums full of jello after a short period of time of 5G.
Yeah, right.
And so debunk that for me, Matt.
All right. So let's go through this. So currently we're on 4G LTE, which uses...
LTE stands for long-term expansion, right?
I'd have to double check that, but something like that, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And then we have, so that uses the old VA, very high frequencies range from broadcast television.
Does it? I thought it was UHF. I would have bet a
I'd have to go look.
All right. Okay.
I'd have to go look at the old ones. But anyway, so it's from 700 megahertz, so it uses 700 megahertz, 850 megahertz, 900 megahertz. Then 1.8 gigahertz, 2.1 gigahertz, 2.3 gigahertz, and 2.6 gigahertz. Those are the bands that are allocated for 4G LTE. And then there's two different frequency ranges that are allocated for the 5G technology. Looks like there's some divvied up for 5G at the 3.5 gigahertz range. Is the lower set in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole bunch of frequencies available above 24 gigahertz.
Okay.
So from 24 to, I think, 68 gigahertz is going to be the primary 5G range.
Okay.
So, and the big difference when you get up in frequency range above 20 gigahertz is really it becomes much more of a line of sight frequency. So,
okay.
They're talking about femtocells, picocells, and microcells being most of it. And these have a range of a few hundred meters. So where 4G, you can, you know, push it a couple of miles. You know, we're talking tenths, you know, mm-hmm. quarter of a mile range with these higher frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have a lot more, you know, cell towers, basically. We have to install a whole bunch of small cell towers all over the place to be able to push this out. So it's really going to be more like a kind of a, akin to a Wi-Fi network where there's you have a whole bunch of access points all over the place.
Sure, sure.
To do this.
So would it be safe to say that out here in relatively rural, out here in the sticks, we're going to be probably very, very late for implementation?
Right. This is really designed for metro areas where there's a lot of people in a lot of places.
Because you can create a real, like a grid, you know, almost a microgrid of, you know.
Right. There's going to be fiber runs all, you know, kind of like every building will probably have a picocell G5 or a microcell, depending on the size of the building, kind of situation.
Okay.
And I'm not sure how, you know, with, you know, hundreds of meters, you know, what's a meter or what's a mile? It's probably like 1500 meters
a
mile.
A third of 5,280. So,
yeah.
Right.
Give or take. Yeah. So I know it's 1,760 yards, but that doesn't do it, since everything's in meters.
Yeah.
So let's call it about 1,500. So you're going to have, you know, a few hundred distances of a few hundred meters. So that you're going to have, in the course of a mile, you'd have to have several cell towers on a interstate to be able to maintain a call.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, you know, I feel much more comfortable already, you know, and especially at the idea that, you know, if it does cause your brain to turn into jello, then it's going to ultimately give those of us that live out here in the sticks an intellectual advantage because, you know, you go down to the city and it's just going to be, you know, a bunch of babbling idiots from all the 5G radiation.
Right. So then we have to talk about ionizing radiation versus non-ionizing radiation, and there's I'm trying to remember. I'll have to see if I can find it, but basically, so we're talking about, let's see here, VHF, yeah. So we're talking about radio waves, which go to about 100 gigahertz.
Okay.
And then you start talking about far infrared. Then you get up to near infrared, which is in the terahertz range, and it keeps on going up. And you have to get to extreme ultraviolet, which is ultraviolet C, so UVC, is the first really ionizing radiation where it'll break.
It affects matter.
Well, it has enough energy in the proton to damage DNA, RNA, cell walls, and other things of that nature. So, and then you have X-rays and gamma rays and all that kind of stuff. So, really, there's very much more energetic things that we have to worry about before these kind of, you know, really low frequency, low energy protons that are radio waves we have to deal
with. That's a really good. I totally understood that. It's But I guess one of the things that I go to is because there's been a lot of talk about speculation about the declination in the bee population and that it has to do with cellular radiation. And so does this, like, what is what you're saying kind of debunk that idea? I mean, that technically, or is it possible that, you know, like for bees, cellular radiation is kind of like a dog whistle? You know, it's like they can hear it and it upsets them and they like will fly as far away from it as they can. I mean, you know, what are the possibilities there?
You know, there's probably not anything there for that. I mean, there's obviously ways to test that and we should definitely test that to make sure that it's, you know, the way it's supposed to be.
Okay.
But from what I've read recently with the hive collapse thing. It looks like it's much more of an issue with there's a fungus, and the neonicotinoids kind of working in concert.
Okay.
Are probably much more likely that those two items are causing the hive mm-hmm. collapse. And then I was reading something about some kind some alcohol thing. What was it? They were studying some part of that, and there was another thing with some sort of alcohol uh-huh. that was causing the bee collapse.
Okay. Got it. So you said neonicotinoids.
Yes.
Which is basically a type of pesticide.
Right. Yeah. Derived from tobacco, from nicotine.
All right. Got it. Great. Well, thank you for that explanation. I feel smarter.
Awesome. So,
which isn't easy. Yeah. Make me smarter.
You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
Hey, thanks a lot for running the board, Matt.
Absolutely. Yep. We'll be back the first Monday in June.
Yep. I'll be here.
With another episode of Geek Speak. Have a safe and great time.
Yep.
Till then.